probably. It's serious, I continued matter-of-factly as I patted Sloane on the back. Actually, Sloane began, but my less than gentle grip on her shoulder gave her second thoughts.
How wonderful, Mom said, quickly recovering. Lucian's never brought a girlfriend to meet me before, and it seems I have a surprise of my own.
She nodded toward a man headed in our direction. He moved like a shark in a too shiny suit. There was a predatory gleam in his eyes as he sized up each table he passed. He carried extra weight around the middle, and his gray hair was distinguished but thinning. A pinky ring adorned his left hand. I didn't have to see it up close to know tasteful diamonds spelled out the initials A.H. Anthony Hugo sat down next to my mother with a look of triumph.
We finally meet in person, he said to me
as he took my mother's hand with a sense of ownership. My hands balled into fists under the table.
Lucian, this is my date, Anthony,
Mom announced breathily.
Oh, shit,
Sloane murmured. She snatched up her butter knife. My hand clamped down on her thigh. I've heard a lot about you, Mr. Hugo, I said. Anthony Hugo, crime boss and bad dresser, was sitting across from me with his arm around my mother.
Not as much as I've heard about you, he said, showing too many teeth.
Anthony and I met at a charity auction recently,
Mom said, blushing like a boy-crazy teenager.
He asked for my number, and it's been a bit of a whirlwind ever since.
And who might this lady in red be?
Anthony asked, turning that mean, toothy smile on Sloane. It was Sloane's turn to clamp her hand on my leg, and it was the only thing that kept me from vaulting out of my chair and murdering Anthony Hugo with a lobster tail in the middle of a crowded restaurant.
None of your business, I said.
My mother giggled awkwardly.
That's Sloane, my son's date. It seems they're childhood sweethearts.
I don't think I've had the pleasure yet,
Anthony said, letting his gaze linger on Sloane's chest.
And you never will,
she said sunnily. My mother gave a dismayed gasp.
Lucian, your date is being horrendously rude.
And your date is a homicidal drug-dealing criminal, I shot back.
Come now, Anthony said.
His tone was friendly, but he had the eyes of a sociopath.
We can all still be friends. We're practically family. I think you know my son, don't you, Lucian?
I don't understand what's happening, Mom said.
Why don't you and I go to the ladies' room? Sloane suggested, reaching for my mother.
I tightened my grip on Sloane to hold her in place. There was no way the biggest crime boss in the Washington-Baltimore areas came here alone.
Nobody is making a fucking move, Anthony said, dropping all vestiges of social niceties. Not until Rollins and I have had a little talk.
Can I interest anyone in an appetizer?
The unlucky server chose the wrong break in conversation to return.
I'll tell you what. Don't fucking come back here unless you want to be picking your fucking teeth off the carpet,
Anthony snarled. Mom gasped and cowered under his grip, a reaction so painfully familiar to both of us. There's no need for violence, I said, doing my best to sound bored despite the fact that Sloane and I had each other in a stranglehold beneath the table.
Oh, but I think there is. You and your fuck buddy feds have had your fun. It's time to put it to rest, or I'll put everyone you care about in the ground, starting with these two lovely ladies.
Fuck you,
Sloane said, wielding the butter knife at him. My mother's lower lip began to tremble, and she looked as if she were trying to melt into the back of her chair. Anthony smirked.
Little girl's got a big mouth to go with those tits. Heard about the arson. Thought that would have taught her to mind her own fucking business.
I was halfway out of my chair, but Sloane was faster. She leapt to her feet and wielded the useless knife at him, drawing audible gasps from the tables nearby.
I'm a librarian, asshole, she said. Everything is my fucking business. Because of you and your dysfunctional relationship with your son, I almost lost friends. So if you think for one second that I'm going to let you sit there and threaten us, then you're an even bigger idiot than your son.
Thank you for your input, Sloan, I said, removing the knife from her hand and setting it on the tablecloth. You've been warned by my woman. Now you'll listen to me. Take your hands off my mother and get the fuck out of here. If I ever see you anywhere near me or anyone I care about, I'll drop you where you stand. Anthony stood and smoothed a hand over his jacket. You might have cash in class, but I got something you never will.
Questionable fashion sense? Sloan guessed.
Killer instinct. I know when someone's outlived their purpose, and I ain't never once been afraid to end their journey. You have 48 hours to give me everything the feds have on me, along with a few million in reparations, or I'm going to start ending journeys, he said menacingly. My mother was crying silently. Sloan was vibrating with rage next to me. You have that same 48 hours to get your affairs in order, because by the time I'm done with you, there will be no journey left to end. I will dismantle your business, your life, your family, your fucking face, and I'm going to enjoy doing it, I said. My mother reached for her water glass with shaking hands. Sloan, however, was looking at me like I'd just rescued a litter of puppies from a flood, shirtless. Dunno, from where I sit, you're the one at this table with the most to lose, he said, with an insipid smirk. When you have everything to lose, you'll do anything to keep it, I said darkly. Anthony snorted, then slapped the table like it was a bongo drum. 48 hours, can't fucking wait, he turned to my mother. I'll be seeing you soon, doll. Then his gaze centered on Sloan. But I think I'll be seeing you first.
Gee, that'll be tough after I claw your eyes out, she said with a feral smile.
Anthony pointed his fingers at me like a gun and mimed pulling the trigger. Sloan lunged, knocking over a water glass and sending several sets of utensils to the floor. I hauled her back into my side. Easy picks. Together, we watched Anthony Hugo slither his way out of the restaurant. With the snap of a finger, four men in suits followed him out. Sloan breathed a sigh of relief. Meanwhile, my mother was slumped in her chair, one hand covering her face. Everyone in the entire restaurant was staring.
I didn't know we were getting dinner and a show.
The amused comment came from none other than Maureen Fitzgerald, who looked both angelic and sinful in a glittery cocktail dress the color of champagne.
Wow, killer dress, Sloan said.
Now is not the time, Maureen, I told her.
Oh, my God, you're Maureen Fitzgerald, Sloan whispered. The one and only, she said, winking at Sloan. After witnessing Anthony's little hissy fit, I thought I'd stop by your table and offer my services.
What services might those be? I asked, holding Sloan by the wrist and texting my security team with the other hand.
I might have some information that can help you with your problem.
She nodded toward the door Anthony had exited. Not here, I said.
Of course not. Tonight, your place.
Be careful, I cautioned.
I'm a woman. I'm always careful.
Her gaze skipped my mother and landed on Sloan. Her smile warmed.
It looks as though Lucian's tastes have significantly improved. Your skin is flawless, Sloan whispered.
I rolled my eyes. But Maureen patted one cheek with feminine pride.
Thank you. She's a keeper, Lucian. Try not to ruin it.
I grunted and nodded at Grace when she entered the restaurant. Let's go. Grace led us through the kitchen to a service elevator in the back. The staff didn't even blink as we made our way past prep stations and fiery grills. My mother sagged against the elevator wall when the doors closed.
I don't understand what happened, she said, bringing her hands to her cheeks. All I know is I was humiliated.
I apologize for embarrassing you by preventing you from being the pawn of a madman. Anthony Hugo is a criminal who would have no qualms about making you disappear just to get to me.
It's always about you. Every man who shows any interest in me is just trying to get something out of you,
Mom whispered bitterly. That man is a thug. He's had people killed for far less than what I'm doing, and you think that's all right because he treats you like some kind of trophy?
Your father wanted to hide me away. He never wanted anyone to acknowledge that I existed.
This isn't about the past. This is about your safety right now. She fluttered her delicate, bird-like hands in front of her face.
I can't discuss this with you right now.
We'll discuss this now. Do not answer his calls. Do not go anywhere with him. If you see him anywhere, leave immediately. Grace, I need you to
beef up the security detail in your mom, got it? She said grimly.
And now you're telling me where to be and who to see, controlling everything. What I do, where I go, what I spend. You're just like him,
Mom whimpered.
Right now, I don't give a fuck, Mother. I saw the flash of pain and the blur of movement. The crack of her hand against my face rang out. Grace made a move, but Sloane got there first and shoved her way between us.
Excuse me, Kayla!
Fury was a fire that lit her up from the inside. She put her finger in my mother's pale, dignified face.
You do not ever, ever lay a hand on him like that again. After everything that you two have been through, you hit your son for protecting you from a certifiable sociopath? That's insane.
That's enough, Sloane, I said, resting a hand on her shoulder. She was vibrating against me.
It's not nearly enough. You have the worst taste in men. Anthony Hugo is a walking red flag, and you invited him to dinner. Oh, and if you want to spend your money on whatever you want, then get a fucking job, lady. You only get to be a victim for so long before you have to evolve into a survivor.
Sloane continued.
You don't understand what it's like, Mom said with a tearful whisper. I wanted to be nice to you, to have empathy for poor, victimized Kayla. But that was 2 decades ago. You've had 20-plus years to grow up. Yet here you are, all those years later, still perfectly comfortable playing the victim. Still accepting your son's checks because you're too fragile to stand on your own 2 feet. He doesn't owe you, lady. You owe him. For every time he stepped between you and the man you chose over him, for every time you made him responsible for your choices, I'm trying not to blame you for that, but you're making it really fucking hard.
Sloane was shouting now. My head of security was nodding in agreement.
You are not to have any contact with Lucian until you can apologize for every shitty thing you've done to him,
Sloane announced. The elevator doors opened into a parking garage. Both my cars were waiting, engines running, and half a dozen of my security team were stationed outside. My mother gasped and hurried out of the elevator. Enough, I said quietly. But Sloane wasn't finished.
And another thing, go to therapy,
she called after her. I grabbed Sloane around the waist. Take my mother home, I ordered Grace, nodding at the first SUV. I half-carried Sloane to the second one and deposited her in the back seat before sliding in next to her. The door slammed shut, casting us into darkness.
Hey! You promised me didn't.
I cut off her accusation by crushing my mouth to hers.
42. A Volcano of Lust. Sloane. We barely made it home. I knew Lucian had important, vital things to take care of, like destroying a crime boss who had just threatened our lives. I trusted him to handle it, I realized. I didn't trust the man not to crush my heart into a pancake, but I trusted him with my life. And that was very important. But there was one thing that had trumped them all. It had been weeks since we'd been together, orgasmically, and crime boss or no crime boss, I was a volcano of lust. That was so fucking hot. I murmured against his mouth as he carried me over the threshold and kicked the door shut behind us. My legs were locked around his waist, my hands fisting in his hair, holding him to me. I knew what had gotten into me, but I wasn't sure why Lucian had turned ravenous beast the second he'd pushed me into the back seat after I'd gone all shrew on his mother. At the moment, I didn't particularly care.
What was?
He demanded, yanking the straps of my dress down. You being all, ho-hum, I'm so bored by your pathetic threats, I said, kissing and biting my way down his neck. He growled, and the vibrations rippled through my nipples that were plastered against him.
You have 2 seconds to help me get you out of this dress, or I'm going to destroy it.
I didn't move fast enough for his liking, and found myself perched on the cold marble of the entryway table. The man had the top of my dress wrestled to my waist in seconds, with only 1 or 2 horrendous ripping noises. This doesn't mean anything, I reminded him over the hammering of my heart.
You're right. It means everything, he countered.
Agree to disagree, I decided. It wasn't an argument worth having right this second. He removed my strapless bra deftly with 1 hand and let out another low growl before diving for me face first. I let out a strangled laugh. Why are you so obsessed with my boobs?
For the same reason you're obsessed with my dick, because they're fucking perfect, he said as his mouth found its way to the first sensitive peak.
Well, he wasn't the only one who was going to play. It felt too good, being spread so wide in front of him, his mouth working its magic on my sensitive peak. I reached between us and found his erection straining beneath the fabric of his pants. I gripped him hard.
God damn it, he hissed against me.
A shudder ran through me. I could feel the pulls of his mouth echo inside me. Without breaking contact with my breast, Lucian reached between my legs and dragged the sheer pink crotch of my underwear to the side.
Need to feel you.
I was good with that. So good with it, I barely flailed at all when he gripped me by the hips and scooted me to the very edge of the table.
Hold still, Pix,
he ordered, battling my hand away from his crotch. I was about to argue until I heard the sound of his zipper. Oh, God, I groaned as he angled the plush head of his penis against my clitoris, parting the lips of my sex. Lucian released my sensitized nipple with a pop. The cool air made the wet tip even more pronounced.
Don't stop working my cock, baby, he ordered before moving to my other nipple.
I obliged and gripped the velvet-smooth shaft. He groaned and whispered,
Such a good girl,
against my breast. I let out a pathetic, gasping moan as he laved my ignored nipple with his magical tongue. I was so wet, and every suck from his mouth, every nudge from the head of his cock made my inside spasm emptily. My grip on him had to be painful, but the noises he made at my breast were ones of ecstasy. I grabbed the back of his head with my free hand and held him against me. My breasts felt heavy and swollen from his attention. Without warning, he reached between us and speared 2 fingers into my opening. We moaned together as if sharing the pleasure. His fingers worked me mercilessly as I rode his hand and stroked his cock with borderline violence. It felt like magic. We were magic. He braced a hand under my rear end, angling me until my back was on the table, and then I felt the probing finger. First, it dipped between my legs where I had turned to Aqua Woman, then it slid higher, dancing up the cleft between my cheeks. It stopped and probed gently at the puckered entrance. He pulled back from my breast, leaving my nipple damp and distended. There was a question in his eyes. He was asking for permission. I didn't trust my words, so I answered him the best way I could by shifting my hips and pushing back against that finger. With a possessive growl, Lucian speared 1 finger into my rear end just as his other fingers curled inside my sex. His cock released a surge of pre-cum onto my fingers. He liked possessing my body, craved it even. I was hanging on by 1 teeny tiny tensile thread. I was spread open and filled up. My entire body was taut with the need to orgasm. And when his mouth found my breast once again, when he gave 1 deep suck, I came apart. The orgasm slammed into me, wrecking me. My inner walls clamped down on his fingers as he worked them inside me. I kept working his cock with my hand, kept riding his fingers, kept pressing back against that single digit that filled me in a brand new way.
"That's my girl," he muttered. "You're so fucking beautiful when you come."
I clung to his cock like it was an anchor in the storm, while my orgasm ravaged us both.
"Let me come on you,"
he demanded roughly. But I had other ideas. I released his erection and pushed against his chest. He backed off immediately.
"Tell me what you need,"
he said, his voice husky. I slipped off the edge of the table and sank to my knees in front of him. "This," I said, reaching out to encircle the root of his shaft with my hand. "Please." Fire blazed to life in those gray eyes when he realized what I was asking for. His cock surged in my hand, wanting what I was asking for, needing it. "I trust you to take care of Hugo. I want you to trust me to take care of you," I told him. Lucian swallowed hard, his cheeks hollowing above the groomed edge of his beard. Then he nodded. My heart climbed into my throat. It was acquiescence enough. He was going to let me give him this. I leaned forward and danced my tongue over him from root to tip. His convulsive shudder and whispered oath gave me the confidence of an oral sex superhero. I parted my lips and, with no warning, took him to the back of my throat. Lucian's fist came down on the tabletop behind me.
"Christ!"
he barked as I worked him with mouth and fist. I took as much of him as I could, wanting to systematically seduce him, to reduce him to the need to come. I cupped his velvety sack and squeezed. A finger gently slid over my cheek. I looked up at him from my knees. He was a king, a titan, but I was in control. Then that finger was gone and he was shoving his hand roughly into my hair.
"Damn it, Sloane, you're the only one," he muttered.
I let him guide my head with his hand, setting a new, rougher, faster pace. The last vestiges of his control had vanished. I had done that to him. He said it again and again as he filled my mouth over and over again.
"You're the only one."
My fingers tightened on his heavy sack, and Lucian froze and held at the back of my throat. There was a sudden hot burst of pre-cum.
"Fuck, fuck, fuck,"
he said. Dragging my mouth off his cock, he tackled me to the cold tile.
"Say yes,"
he said, notching the head of his erection between my legs with jerky movements.
"Yes."
He held me in place with one hand on my shoulder and, with one surge, entered me.
"Take me, all of me,"
he ordered, his beard abrading my neck. I was dizzyingly full. It felt so good. It was too much and yet somehow exactly right. There was nothing between us. I was fully possessed by him. It was raw, real, and God help me, I wanted more, and Lucian gave it to me. When he released the first hot rope of cum inside me, I obediently followed him, careening over the edge. I had no other choice.
"God, yes, Sloane, my Sloane,"
he groaned as he came and came inside me, detonating a release like no other. Maeve. So, Party Crasher Kurt and I talked, and we're going to try again. Me. Hallelujah. I can't wait to tell your kids about how Auntie Sloane made out with Daddy Kurt once when Mommy Maeve was being a dumbass. Maeve. Maybe it's best to leave that out of the conversation. Me. Aha! You didn't automatically dismiss the idea of having kids with Kurt. I knew you liked him. Maeve. Your little sister colors are showing. Me. I can't help it. Your happiness makes me happy. Also, I just had a bunch of orgasms. So, Maeve. Same girl. Same. Me. High five.
43. The Takedown. Lucian. No one leaves here until we have a game plan, I announced. Sloane sat contentedly in my home office, dressed in pajamas, eating the burger and fries I'd had delivered. She'd tamed her sex hair into a long, loose braid that she wore draped over one shoulder. With her legs tossed over the arm of the chair and her bare feet wiggling, she was the picture of relaxed. Meanwhile, behind my desk, I was a roiling cauldron of rage. The team I'd assembled wasn't helping my mood. "This'll be fun," Nolan said, plowing into a platter of chicken fingers.
"Speak for yourself," Lena complained. "My fiancé had just invited me to join him in the shower when I got the summons."
"So what kind of dirt are we looking for?"
Nalana, the private investigator, demanded, shoveling two pieces of pizza onto her plate. She was dressed in a cocktail dress and leather jacket. I realized I had no idea if this was her off-the-clock look or another undercover getup.
"Yeah, it would help to know what we're looking for."
The only member of the cybersecurity team who'd bothered answering her phone asked around the mouthful of Twizzlers she'd just shoved into her face. She had platinum hair, worn long on top and shaved on the sides. Her name was something like Pasture or Great Plains. "Anything that will force the FBI to move on Hugo now. Not a month from now, or a week from now, or even 48 hours from now. I want him in custody by noon tomorrow." Nalana let out a low whistle.
"That's a tall order. Prairie's right. We need some kind of direction."
Prairie. So close. "Your direction is to do whatever it takes to get me something we can use. I don't care if you get arrested in the process. Find me something," I said on a near snarl. The doorbell rang.
"Want me to get that?"
Sloane asked, tentatively. I shook my head. "Grace will get it." I wasn't letting Sloane out of my sight until Anthony Hugo and his entire organization were nothing but rubble. And then I was going to force her down the aisle. The woman had defended me not just to a crime boss who threatened our lives, but to my own mother. And when this was all over, I was going to show her exactly what that had meant to me. The door to my office opened, and in walked Maureen Fitzgerald, still in her dress from earlier.
"Well, this looks like an interesting party," she observed.
"Is that?"
Prairie began.
"The most successful notorious madam in Washington, D.C.," Lena filled in.
"Yep, I like your shoes."
"Thank you," Maureen said with a feline smile. "Here's a little party favor for your team."
She dropped a 2-inch thick folder on top of the pizza box. Nolan reached for it, but Maureen laid a manicured hand on top of the folder.
"I trust I can count on your discretion."
"Oh, yes, ma'am. Absolutely nothing but discreet around here," Nolan promised.
"Good,"
she said, removing her hand and sliding her arms free of her wool coat.
"Are there any chicken fingers left?"
"So we've got three more shell corporations nailed down thanks to Maureen's girl's intel," Nolan summarized, stifling a yawn. "First two have about $2 million apiece scattered in offshore accounts. Prairie is digging into the third now." "Keep digging. A few million dollars wasn't enough to have the FBI knocking on Hugo's door in the morning." Lena joined us.
"Update time?"
"What have you got?" I asked her.
"Security has informed everyone the offices are closed for the next 2 days. Petula is rescheduling all in-person meetings and shifting what she can to virtual. Grace beefed up security everywhere, including your mother's and Sloane's mom's. Nash and the Knockemout PD are on high alert and keeping an eye on things back home. Nalana called. She's squeezing a few street-level sources looking for intel. Rumor has it he's got a big shipment due in from South America by the weekend."
"That's too far out," I reminded her.
"Maybe Hugo was just yanking your chain about the 48 hours?
Nolan suggested, yawning again.
Is this crisis interrupting your beauty sleep? I asked dryly. A, it's 4 in the fucking morning, and B, the wife got me up for a 6 a.m. yoga class today. Yesterday. Not all of us run on no sleep and the tears of frightened children, he pointed out. You got up before dawn because your wife asked you to. Hugo said I had 48 hours to deliver everything the feds had on him or he'd start with Sloan. Start with as in, Lena trailed off, and we all turned to look at the little librarian who was sitting on the floor frowning over fanned out paperwork. I'm not letting that happen, I said. Does Blondie believe you're in it for the long haul yet? Nolan asked, as Sloane shoved her glasses up her nose. Not yet, but if it takes killing a man in cold blood to prove it, I'll do it.
Let's keep that as option B, Lena said. I hear they're not as lenient with conjugal visits anymore, and judging from Sloane's sex hair, you two have a lot of ground to make up.
I left them and crossed the room to her. She looked up at me as I crouched down. You have that line between your eyebrows you get when you're concentrating, I observed, running my finger over the spot in question. You should get some sleep.
And miss all the fun?
When this is over, I'm taking you to a private island where we can drink piña coladas naked on a beach so I can teach you what fun is, I decided. Sloane grinned at me.
Since when is Lucien Rollins an expert on fun?
Since he almost came in your mouth when you were on your knees.
Very flattering, but I need you to put away your party hat for a second and get out your broody master of the business and political universe beret for a second, Lucifer.
What do you need? She wet her lips and glanced down at the papers in front of her.
Something Hugo said tonight has been bothering me.
Everything the asshole said should have bothered you. She shook her head.
The thing about the fire, about me not learning my lesson from the arson. At first, I thought it was just him letting us know he'd been watching me, but I started thinking, what if he was connected somehow?
I sat next to her and helped myself to a swig of her lukewarm root beer. Connected in what way?
We think the fire was retaliation for me working on Mary Louise's case, right? I was threatened by Cinnamon Man, who specifically mentioned her name on the same day Mary Louise was attacked. Mary Louise dropped it, but I kept pushing. You got her moved to a new facility where she'd be safer and got Alan protection. I kept digging. So someone decided to let us know they weren't happy by setting fire to the library while I was in it.
Her recap of the situation was raising my already dangerously high blood pressure. What's the connection? Why would a sociopath crime boss in D.C. care about a wrongfully convicted female prisoner? Sloane bit her lip.
What if it's the prison?
She handed me a sheet of paper.
Frouse Correctional Center is a private prison owned by a corporation called Civic Group, which is owned by two other corporations, which then made me think all about your sneaky underhandedness hiding grants and donations in entities named after cherry trees. And while I was thinking about your sneakiness, this one caught my eye.
She tapped the page above the words Rex Management.
Rex is Latin for king, she explained.
Which Hugo fancies himself to be, I mused, following her drift.
Exactly, Sloane said, beaming at me. So I did a search for other private prisons in Virginia, Maryland, and North Carolina, and found 3 more facilities owned by Civic Group, all run down, all with overcrowding and understaffing complaints, but all providing profits to Civic Group and its owners. I can't tell what kind of profit we're talking, but each place has a contract with the government providing them money for each inmate housed. The more people in the facility, the higher the profits.
When I threatened to have Duncan Hugo move to another facility, he panicked, I recalled, scanning Sloane's research. He said he wouldn't be safe.
Was it one of these 3?
She asked, rising to her knees in excitement. I pointed to Lucrum. That's the one. Sloane threw her arms around my neck.
I knew it! I did good, didn't I? 2-time convicted felon Anthony freaking Hugo is part owner of 4 private correctional facilities. That's got to be seriously illegal.
Not to mention the fact that he can have anyone in one of those prisons eliminated if necessary, I pointed out.
Sloane pulled back, looking horrified.
Holy shit.
This is good, Pix, really good, I said, giving her a squeeze. She cupped my face in her hands.
Take him down, big guy.
I gave her a hard kiss on the mouth and deposited her on top of her research.
Pasture!
I snapped at the hacker. She looked up and pointed at herself.
Me?
Sloane leaned in.
I think you mean Prairie.
Right, Prairie. That's what I said. Stop what you're doing and give me everything you can on Rex Management and Civic Group.
I gave Sloane's shoulder a squeeze as I dialed Special Agent Idler.
It's 4 a.m. This better be fucking good, she rasped.
How soon can you put a team together to drag Hugo into the nearest cell? I hadn't slept or showered in 36 hours, but Anthony Hugo looked worse than I did, I thought smugly as I took the chair across from him. Gone were the slick suit and the diamond pinky ring, and in their place, he wore a baggy orange jumpsuit that only made him look more sallow. You came here to gloat? He demanded, as the guard cuffed him to the table with a satisfying snap. Because I'll be out of here within a day. They can't keep me.
Ah, but they can, I said, leaning back on the metal chair. I just came from Special Agent Idler's office.
That bitch will be the first to go, he sneered cagily.
Well, maybe the second after your little blonde girlfriend.
Here's the thing about that, Anthony. These are just the beginning of your charges. The other officers in your little Rex Management have all been arrested. Coincidentally, they're also most of your inner circle. And they're singing like their lives depend on it. The feds have already talked to a dozen of your crew serving sentences in your facilities, and they've confessed to an astonishing number of crimes, including assaults and murder. Most of them weren't afraid of pointing the finger at who gave the orders, now that you're behind bars, especially after they were promised deals and sentence reductions. Anthony went even paler.
You listen to me, you son of a fucking bitch.
No, I said stonily. It's your turn to listen. In less than 2 days, I've dismantled every piece of your business. Everything you worked for your entire life. It's all gone. Your assets are frozen. Your men are sitting in interrogation rooms around the city, including the ones you had dump Felix Metzer in the Potomac. You have nothing left. Do you know why that is?
Fuck you.
Wrong answer. I took everything from you because you tried to take from me. You threatened my family. No one walks away from that.
I'll get to you. And when I do, I'll finish the job I started with that list your police chief friend was on. I'll take out every single one of the people you love, and then I'll make you bleed.
I smirked. Good luck with that.
You think seeing your friend pump full of lead in that library fire were bad? I'm just getting started. I'll come for you personally. I got guys watching you, and that FBI bitch. One call from me and you're both dead like Metzer. No one crosses me.
I stood up and buttoned my suit jacket. I wouldn't be so sure that. That FBI bitch had your guys arrested yesterday. Third strike for quite a few of them, which made them surprisingly cooperative. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have someplace I need to be. I strolled out of the room and left his snarled threats behind me.
Tell me everything,
Sloane pounced the second I opened my front door. Does he know he's cooked? Did he threaten you? Did you laugh in his face? Is there surveillance footage of him freaking out that I could watch? She was wearing pajama pants with palm fronds on them and a tight black tank top. Her hair was damp from a shower, and her eyes were sparkling. Something warm and bright expanded in my chest. It felt like I'd swallowed the sun. I gripped her wrist, bent at the waist, and tossed her neatly over my shoulder. You two are free to go, I said to Lena and Grace, who had been on Sloane guard duty for the last 24 hours.
Woo-hoo, Grace said.
Have fun, kids,
Lena called as I carried Sloane down the hall to the bedroom. I tossed her on the bed, making her laugh.
You're awfully frisky for a man who hasn't slept in 2 days.
Ruining the life of a bad guy does that to me, I teased, stripping off my jacket and tie.
My hero.
The words from her did strange things to my insides, and I knew I'd treasure them just like every attaboy I'd earned from her father. Sloane crawled higher up the bed and propped herself on the new mound of pillows I'd had delivered. She patted the spot next to her.
Come tell me all about it, big guy, and then we'll get naked and do naughty things to each other.
I made it a quarter of my way through my retelling of Hugo's arrest before I passed out with Sloane in my arms and proceeded to sleep the sleep of a hero for the next 10 hours.
44. It's not about drawer space. Sloane. Steph. Flowers and champagne are too cliche, right? Me. Too cliche for what? Steph. For asking a man to move in with me. Me. I'm honored that you'd come to me for your grand gesture advice. Steph.
Naomi is too much of a romantic, and Lena wouldn't know romance if it bit her in her delectable ass, so I'm asking you. Advise me already. Too much or not enough?
Me. It depends on the rest of the setup. Is this an intimate conversation over wine and homemade pasta or whatever your talented gay hands make thing? Or is this an announcement with fireworks and a marching band in front of the entire town thing?
Steph. I see I've come to the wrong person. I should have asked a straight dude.
Me. Have you thought about tattooing "Will you move in with me" on your ass? Or turning a kid's birthday / petting zoo into a surprise proposal?
Steph. I need to go back to the drawing board. Everything has to be perfect, meticulously planned. It's got to be romantic and on brand. A story we'll tell our kids.
My God. What if he doesn't want kids?
Do I want kids?
Me. You're spiraling. Go eat some chocolate. Aha! There you are, I said, triumphantly digging the bra I'd been looking for out of my overnight bag. I shoved the rest of the contents back inside and zipped it shut. The very naked, very sinful-looking Lucian cast a baleful look in my direction from his position on the bed.
What? You said we were going out for dinner. I can't go braless in public. These babies unleashed have been known to cause stampedes, I said over my shoulder as I headed into the man's massive spa-like bathroom. Hexagonal charcoal tiles were warm and toasty under my bare feet. The double vanity had enough space between the high-end onyx sinks to play a round of shuffleboard. And the shower. Oh, the shower. It was the main reason I hadn't yet demanded that Lucian take me home to knock him out. Anthony Hugo had been in custody for 4 days. The danger was officially over. But I was still here enjoying 4 days of dinners out and walks under the cherry blossoms. 4 days of working out of the same office together, sharing the same bed. 4 days of having an astronomical amount of sex with Lucian Rollins. I unpacked my toiletries from the bag I kept hanging on the linen closet door and finagled the settings on the shower's touchscreen.
I can program your preferences into the system, Lucian offered from behind me.
I eyed him as he prowled into the bathroom naked. Nah, I like pushing buttons, I said as I took in the obscenely fine view. He looked like a moving statue, a marble ode to perfection come to life. I stepped into the tiled shower and let the rainhead faucet pelt me from above. I groaned. Ugh, this makes me want to renovate my bathroom. Lucian joined me, his hands immediately finding the curves of my hips. We showered in silence, luxuriating in the hot water and each other's bodies, but I could feel a tension in him that hadn't been there before.
What's wrong? Is there a problem with the Hugo case?
I asked as Lucian watched me pensively in the mirror while I towel-dried my shampoo and conditioner bottles before slipping them back in the bag.
My problem is you, he said, turning to face me.
Me? Now what did I do? I demanded, trying not to be dazzled by the water droplets sprinkled across his chest.
I gave you drawers and closet space, I gave you vanity space, he announced, yanking open one of the empty drawers next to the sink he'd designated as mine. I made room for you in my shower, in my home.
And I told you I don't need any of that. He stuck a finger in my face.
That is my problem. How are we going to share a life together when you won't even unpack your shit, Sloane?
Seriously? I scoffed. You're mad because I'm not taking up enough of your storage?
You won't unpack here. You didn't make space for me in your place. I had to bring in a closet company just to make room for myself. You're not committing to us.
Lucian, we haven't even talked about being an us beyond you stubbornly announcing that we were a couple. His scowl darkened.
You want to talk? Fine. We'll talk.
You could have at least let me dry my hair, I grumbled as Lucian stabbed the bell on a swanky three-story brick home on a tree-lined street in Georgetown. Every vehicle at the curb looked as though it cost somewhere in the six-figure range. The door opened, and a white-bearded, bespectacled man peered out at us.
You're early, he announced.
He wore a white apron over a black, orange, and neon-yellow speckled cardigan.
Emery meets Sloane. Sloane Emery,
Lucian said as he towed me across the threshold and toward a stately study. Sorry about Lucifer. I think he's hangry, I explained over my shoulder.
Well, this should be fun,
Emery announced, rubbing his palms together and following us inside. It was the office of a man with means, intellect, and great taste, I decided, scanning the titles on the dark mahogany bookshelves.
Work your therapy magic and fix her,
Lucian announced, taking a stance near the fireplace. I thought we were going to dinner at your friend's, I pointed out.
We are friends. He forgets that from time to time,
Emery added, crossing to a cabinet and producing a bottle of wine. He gestured toward one of two leather armchairs in front of the bookshelves. I sat.
I don't need your friendly advice. I need a therapist to talk some sense into this woman,
Lucian announced, crossing his arms and glaring at me. I glared back. Seriously?
This is highly unusual, even for you,
Emery said to Lucian. Don't look at me, I said with a shrug. One second I'm enjoying the shower of the gods, and the next he's yelling about drawer space and closet organizers. Lucian pushed away from the fireplace and began to pace.
Do you see what I have to deal with?
Emery looked amused.
I take it this is not about drawer space, though if it is, I'm happy to call Sasha. She's the expert in home organization. You should see her pantry. She won't commit,
Lucian announced, then winced.
Sloane, not Sasha. But you should burn that sweater before Sasha sees it.
I think it's a lovely sweater, I insisted.
I'm trying to integrate our lives both here and in Knockemout, and Sloane is refusing to participate. The woman repacks her toiletries after every shower,
Lucian bellowed. Emery looked as if he were trying very hard not to laugh as he poured three glasses of wine.
I see.
I got out of my chair and stalked toward Lucian, interrupting his pacing.
And I told you, you don't just get to order me into a relationship. A couple of drawers are not going to make me feel secure enough to even entertain the idea of dating you.
We're not dating, Lucian said. We're living together. We're having sex. We're getting married.
If that's your proposal, it needs work, I shot back.
I heard a crunching sound and found Emery settled in the chair I'd vacated, snacking on pistachios and watching us gleefully.
Why can't you just accept that I mean what I say?
Lucian demanded. He shoved both hands through his hair. His movements were jerky and frenetic, so unlike his usual animal-like grace.
Because past experience dictates I should run screaming into the night. You've cut me out of your life twice now, once for 2 decades, and you just expect me to forget about that? To trust you?
I was shouting now, too. I definitely wasn't winning any Dinner Guest of the Year awards.
Tell me what you want, and I'll give it to you,
Lucian said, frustration bleeding into his tone.
I want everything you're promising, but I don't believe you're going to deliver. Happy now?
Silence descended between us as we stared at each other. Emery cleared his throat and brushed the pistachio crumbs from his hands.
It sounds as if you two have never really had the opportunity to deal with the issues that kept you apart in the first place. I always thought that I needed to forgive you,
Lucian said suddenly. He took a breath and stared down at me, his gray eyes stormy.
You broke my trust. You deliberately disobeyed me. And because of you, I went to jail. Because of you, my mother was left completely vulnerable to him. I missed my 18th birthday, my high school graduation. Because of you, my past cemented my future.
I winced as the truth he'd kept bottled up for all these years hit its target. It was a wound that had never fully healed in either of us.
But,
Emery prompted, reaching for another handful of pistachios.
But you put yourself between my mother and father to protect her, to protect me. You did it again this week, trying to stand between me and a madman threatening us both, and then once more with my own mother.
He rasped.
If you're pissed off about that, you're wasting your time because I'm not apologizing. Anthony Hugo is a dickless slug, and your mother doesn't get to raise a hand to you ever,
I told him, my voice shaking with emotion. He reached out and took my wrists, his thumbs sliding over the old scar.
I don't want an apology. I don't need one. I never did. You are the only person in the world to ever stand up for me like that.
I opened my mouth, but he shook his head.
Yes, Knox and Nash would, if given the chance. But I've never asked. I never had to ask you either. You simply did it. Because that's the kind of person you are. Stupidly brave. Dangerously headstrong.
Your proposals and your compliments really suck, I said.
But he didn't smile. Instead, he squeezed my wrists again.
Broken men break women, Sloan.
I went still. Lucian, I whispered.
My father broke my mother to the point that even years later, she's still a victim,
he continued.
She might never be whole or healthy because of him. I didn't want to chance that with you. I didn't want you anywhere near me, where men like my father or Anthony Hugo could hurt you to hurt me.
I gripped his forearms, unsure of what to say. I felt dizzy and off kilter, as if his words were enough to shake the very foundations I'd built my life on.
I can still hear the snap of your bones in my head,
he confessed.
I wasn't even there, but it still echoes. It's the first thing I hear when I wake up in the morning. It's what I hear every time you walk out of a room and I want to go after you. It's been my reminder to leave you alone. He could have killed you, and I couldn't protect you because I was behind bars. I couldn't protect her. I couldn't protect you.
My eyes welled with tears. I reached up and cupped his face in my hands. His beard was rough against my palms. Lucian, honey, it was never your job to protect your mom. It was never your job to keep the world safe from your dad.
For the record, that's what I've been saying for years,
Emery cut in.
Go burn a casserole,
Lucian said without any heat to his words. Emery chuckled. I broke your trust. I'll admit that, I said. I was young and impulsive, and I couldn't stand the thought of him hurting you. You hear my wrist breaking in your head? I hear him screaming and hitting you that night. It still haunts me. Lucian closed his eyes.
Sloan.
No. Now it's my turn. I was scared. Too scared to go outside and stop him, and too afraid he'd hurt my dad if I told him. Maybe if I had, things would have been different. But we'll never know because I called 911 just like you asked me not to. And I watched Wiley Ogden march you out in handcuffs just like you knew he would. And I will never, ever get over that. If I had made a different decision that day, you wouldn't know what the inside of a cell looks like.
I would have, eventually. Because there was only one way he was going to stop.
That's why I called. Because you wouldn't have recovered from that. You would have spent your life thinking you were just like him. Which, by the way, means you're nothing like him. He drew in a shaky breath, his eyes burning into mine. But thinking about all the what-ifs is a waste of what we both know is precious time, I continued. I'm so sorry you've spent your life believing that you're tainted, that you don't deserve happiness. That breaks my heart, Lucian, because you're the most stupidly generous person I've ever met. You see a need to be filled, and you quietly go about filling it. You don't require an audience or accolades. You've spent your life righting wrongs at the highest level. And that's heroic. You're heroic.
I don't see it that way.
His words were quiet, but his hands had moved to my hips and were holding me gently. I know, and I'm so sorry you've been battling with that by yourself. You aren't to blame for a single thing your father ever did.
According to him, I was to blame for everything. My room wasn't clean enough. My grades weren't good enough. I didn't call him sir loud enough. Everything I did was wrong.
My heart wasn't just cracking open now. It was shattering into a million shards. I held on tighter to him. You did nothing wrong, Lucian. That was all on him. He was a broken man who tried to break you, but he failed. On his best day, he would never be able to hold a candle to you. I'm so proud of the boy you were, the man you became. You took back your family name and made it mean something good. You don't have him in you. I see more of my father than yours in you.
I have a temper, but I'm working on it. I've been working on it.
He gestured to Emery, who was still devouring pistachios like a chipmunk. I snorted indelicately. Who doesn't have a temper? It's what we choose to do with it that matters. Your self-control is annoyingly impressive. And that's coming from someone who dedicated most of her adult life to trying to drive you nuts. Lucian shook his head.
All this time, I thought I needed to forgive you for what you did.
How about now? I prompted.
And just like it wasn't your fight to win, it was never your apology to make.
I feel like you're gearing up to apologize to me. Are you hangry or dehydrated? I asked. He traced his knuckles over my cheek.
You don't need to apologize to me, Pix, because I don't need to forgive you.
Do you want, like, a Snickers or something? He shook his head.
I'm sorry, Sloane.
Sorry for blaming you. Sorry for putting you in the position where you felt you had no choice. Sorry for never communicating what I really wanted or needed until now.
What do you need now? I asked breathily.
You. Only you. Always you.
Now I was downright terrified. He was closing the distance between us. His breath was hot against my face, and I was already anticipating the feel of his lips on mine.
I think you've both done some excellent work here tonight, Emery said, wrecking the moment like a human record scratch. I'd like to suggest that you take some time to get to know each other on a deeper, more intimate level before you make any decisions.
Time?
Lucian repeated, like the word tasted bitter on his tongue.
There's a lot of undoing to be done. This is real life. It's not like the movies where one grand gesture will convince Sloane that you aren't going to close down and abandon her again,
Emery explained. I'd seen that look before on Lucian's handsome face. A challenge had been laid, and he was compelled to meet it.
Now, who's ready for some wine?
Emery asked.
Me,
I said with more than a hint of desperation.
Naomi, how are things with Lucian?
Lena, has he let you out of his bedroom/sight yet?
Me, things are complicated. Well, not in the bedroom, just everywhere else. He says he's committed to this, but he's not going to change his mind. He's saying all the right stuff, everything I've spent years wishing he'd say. But I still feel like I'd be an addled idiot to just happily believe he's going to stick around and make a family with me.
Lena.
What if he buys you a castle or something as a symbol of your happily ever after?
Me. I wouldn't hate that.
Naomi. Or maybe his grand gesture will be listening to the therapist and proving himself to you over time.
Me.
Great. We'll play getting to know you while my eggs shrivel into raisins. I just don't think there's anything he could do that would undo 20-plus years of distrust. At least not before I'm a barren wasteland of fertility.
Naomi.
There are other ways to be a parent.
Lena.
Yeah, you just have to wait for your evil twin to abandon the child you didn't know about.
Naomi.
I was thinking more along the lines of adoption, but I can confirm that the evil twin thing works.
Lena.
Hey, guys. Not to steal the spotlight, but I'm getting married next week.
Me.
Has Nash thrown a Morgan hissy fit over baby's breath yet?
Naomi.
There will be no fit throwing of any kind, only bridal perfection.
45. Snippety doodah. Lucian.
Nash, good luck today. Make sure you can still walk down the aisle next week.
Knox. Oh, fuck. Today's the day our boy becomes a man.
Me.
Fuck you both, very much.
Nash.
I'm feeling unloved and used.
Knox.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't hold up our end of the deal until Lucy learns to play nice.
Me.
I hate you both, and plan to kick your asses at my earliest convenience.
I took a deep breath and straightened my tie in the mirror. On the outside, I looked cool, calm, perhaps a touch pissed off. On the inside, I was a roiling mess of something. I narrowed my eyes at my reflection. I was Lucian fucking Rawlins. I didn't get anxious about shit. I made shit anxious about me. I adjusted my cuffs one final time, nodded to the mirror, and headed out of the room to kickstart my future. My future was sitting at the breakfast bar, polishing off an omelet, looking both adorable and sexy in tight jeans and a red sweater with strawberry elbow patches.
Let's go, I said, spinning the keys for the Jag on my index finger.
Sloane looked up, and I caught her quick grin. For years, her first reaction on seeing me was a scowl.
I wasn't about to take that smile for granted.
You didn't have breakfast, she pointed out, glancing at her watch. And it's not even 7:30 yet.
I pressed a kiss to her wrinkled brow. We're not going to the office this morning.
Where are we going?
She asked, looping her arms around my neck. It's a surprise. She frowned.
You didn't buy a castle, did you?
A castle? I asked, ushering her toward the door. No. Do you want one?
I'm not sure.
15 minutes later, Sloane looked even more concerned.
The urologist? Listen, big guy, I'm great at peeing after sex. I swear I don't have a UTI,
she said, eyeing the building in front of us as I locked the car. We're here for me, not you, I said dryly.
Oh, God. Did I break your penis with that spinning maneuver?
Not yet, but I'm sure it's only a matter of time, I said, handing her the keys.
Are you sick? Is something wrong?
Her eyes were wide and worried behind her glasses.
I'm fine,
I assured her as I held the glass door open for her. The waiting room was all marble and leather and chrome. There were half a dozen men my age, most looking nervously toward the exit, with unread magazines in their laps. Sloane trailed me to the check-in desk where I gave the nurse my name and accepted the clipboard she handed over.
Lucian, what the hell are we doing here?
Sloane hissed. I turned to face her. I'm getting my vasectomy reversed. What came out of her mouth wasn't a sentence. It wasn't even words. It was the garbled tongue of an ancient civilization. That was not the reaction I was expecting. That wasn't even English.
Oh my God. You're willing to have penis surgery just to make babies with me?
Sloane announced to the entire waiting room. She looked like she was about to faint. I reached for her arm, determined to keep her upright. It's more in the testicles, a stranger in a golf shirt said, pointing to a helpful 3D model of a ball sack. I waved a hand in front of Sloane's face. Pix, you in there?
I think she's in shock,
the guy's wife observed as she got out of her chair.
Come here, sweetheart, let's get you a drink of water. Vasectomy, babies,
Sloane murmured.
He's going to unsnip whatever they snipped just because I want to have a family.
The woman led her to the beverage center and pressed a paper cup of water into Sloane's shaking hands.
Well, honey, some men surprise their wives with jewelry. Other men surprise them with surgery on their genitals.
Don't be scared, buddy, the husband said to me. It's in and out, bingo bango. You get to sit on the couch for the rest of the day, icing the boys. Nothing to it.
Take it from him. This is his second vasectomy. Snippity-doo-dah,
his wife said, returning Sloane to me.
He's a pro.
Say something, Sloane, I ordered. She was staring at me with glassy eyes and a dazed expression. I had never in my life seen her make that face before. If you don't say something in the next 10 seconds, I'm going to drag the nearest medical professional away from the nearest set of testicles to examine you. She bent at the waist and sucked in a dramatic breath.
Well, hell, Lucian. I didn't know you were serious about this. I didn't know how to handle this.
She straightened and scrunched up her nose at me.
What if I don't want to have kids with you?
You do, I assured her smugly.
Fair point, but if we have kids, we're going to have to get married. Not that you have to be married to have kids, but because I want to. I want a partner. I don't want to be a single mom with a baby daddy who sends a check.
Judging from the suit, it would be one hell of a check,
the wife mused in not quite a whisper. We're getting married, Sloane. I already told you that.
He thinks he can tell her shit like that,
the husband wheezed in amusement.
I just don't know what's happening right now,
Sloane said, pacing 2 steps away from me before returning to pinch me.
You feel real. You look real. Am I real? Did I slip into some kind of alternate dimension? Oh my God, am I the main character from the Midnight Library?
You're not dying, I said.
You read the Midnight Library?
Her voice rose a full octave. I read all your book club picks, I told her.
But why?
Why? Jesus, Sloane, why do you think? Because I love you. I'm in love with you. I've had the last 20-some years to obsess over you from afar. The wife elbowed her husband.
You never obsessed over me from afar.
That's because the farthest away you go is your sister's book club meetings. Maybe if you went farther, I'd have some room to obsess.
He shot back. Sloane brought her hands to her face. Shit! I don't know what to do or say. Last night, Emery told us to take some time. This isn't time. This isn't even a day later. Not that I wanted time because my fertility is probably dropping by the second, but I was so sure there was nothing you could do to prove to me that you meant everything you said. And now...
She trailed off and gestured at my crotch. Pixie.
Don't laugh at me. I'm allowed to freak out over this. Damn it, she muttered, rubbing her forehead.
I would have handled a castle better.
I'll keep that in mind next time.
I still don't see why you couldn't recover at home,
Sloane said, marching me up the walkway to her front porch.
I thought you'd like driving the Jag, and I am recovering at home, I said. It was the truth. The Waltons' house was the only real home I'd ever known.
Rest and ice, that's what the doctor said,
Sloane reminded me.
I had minor outpatient surgery. I'm fine, I insisted, as she walked backward up the porch steps, holding me by the biceps. I was sore and hungry, but mostly I was nervous as fuck about this next part. She was so intent on helping me up the porch steps that she was ankle deep in cherry blossoms before she bothered to look down.
What the?
I made a mental note to kick Knox's and Nash's asses. The Morgan brothers had outdone themselves to the point of insanity. The entire front porch was buried under 4 inches of cherry blossoms. It looked as if a florist shop had exploded.
Sloane, I began.
Okay, this is weirder than a pile of dead rats, she decided, still holding on to me and frowning at her own blossom-laden cherry tree. Where did this come from?
From two possibly well-meaning idiots who were about to meet their maker. Come here. We waded through the avalanche of pink petals to the porch swing. There, on a table at least, was the champagne I'd ordered. Next to it was a bottle of bourbon that I hadn't, and in front of both bottles was a greasy Dino's pizza box. I knew I should have called Steph, not Knox and Nash, but Steph was busy with his own grand gesture.
Lucian, what the hell is going on?
Sloane demanded, opening the pizza box with suspicion. A movement in the shrubbery caught my eye. Knox Morgan, wearing camouflage and green face paint, rose out of a rhododendron with his phone. He gave me the thumbs up.
What the fuck? I mouthed to him. Video, asshole, he mouthed back, pointing at his phone.
I leaned over the railing and shoved him back into the bush.
Lucian?
Sloane repeated. There's something I want to talk to you about, I said, returning to her side. My heart was in my throat. I could feel my heartbeat in my head as I closed the distance between us. I had almost reached her when the opening bars of Shania Twain's You're Still the One sounded from a fat spruce on the opposite side of the porch steps. I spotted the torso of Nash's uniform peeking out from behind the evergreen. He was holding the speaker of his phone up to a bullhorn. This was why people hired professionals.
Why is there booze and pizza and a half ton of cherry blossom on my front porch?
Sloane asked nervously. I took a deep breath.
Loving you has been a touchstone for more than half my life. But being loved by you, that's a fucking miracle. You, Pixie, are my fucking miracle.
Sloane took a shuddery inhale and shook her head.
I'm not mentally ready for this, Lucian, she whispered.
Yes, you are, and so am I. Marry me, Sloane.
She brought her hands to her eyes, still shaking her head.
What?
She croaked. You heard me. I'd get down on one knee, but I don't know if I'd be able to get back up right now. Marry me. Be my wife. Remind me every day that I'm better than I think I am. Show me what it's like to be loved by you. Because that's all I ever wanted. To be good enough for you. I skimmed my hand over her cheek, then threaded my fingers into her hair. She let out a choked sob.
Don't cry, Pixie, I begged, brushing my lips to her forehead.
It kills me when you cry.
Don't be so sweet then, she said accusingly.
Just hold on a little bit longer and we can go back to hurling insults, I promised.
Okay,
she said on a hiccuping little sigh. Sloane Walton, I have loved you for so long I don't remember what my life was like before my heart was yours. It's changed over the years, but I've loved you as a friend, an enemy, a lover. It would be my greatest honor in this lifetime if you would let me love you as my wife. Tears slid down her cheeks one after the other. Marry me, Sloane. Be my wife. Let me share your life up close. Let me protect you and love you like I'm ready to. I let go of her to retrieve the box from my pocket. It opened with a quiet snick. The noise that came out of her mouth was a wheezing, keening moan that sounded like a bagpipe running full speed into an accordion. A second later, she hurled herself into my arms, knocking me back a step. I'm taking this as a yes, I said between the kisses she landed on my cheeks and mouth. She pulled back and cupped my face in her hands.
Yes,
she shouted. I chuckled softly. Let me put the ring on you, Pix.
God, I wish you hadn't just had a penisectomy, she said, holding out one shaking hand.
We would be editing that out of the engagement video, I decided, as I slid the cool, smooth band onto her finger.
Jesus, it weighs like 5 pounds, she said, reverently holding her hand up so the greedy diamond could catch the spring sunlight.
I'll get you another one to wear on the other hand so you'll be even, I promised, as a joy I'd never known bloomed inside my chest.
Lucian,
she said, her voice breaking. You're not having second thoughts already, are you? I thought the whole vasectomy reversal thing would buy me until at least tomorrow before you started panicking. She shook her head, fresh tears falling.
There's something you need to know.
I held her up by the